So next up is Lenny Lalla, and Lenny is going to talk to us about the longitudinal family medicine experience. I've highlighted all your slides.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for sticking with me. So I'll introduce myself. My name is Lenny Lalla, and I am a practicing family physician. So I've actually been a clinician and a teacher of residents and medical students at the St. Mary's Family Medicine Center for about 15 years now. And up until last year was also a community family physician. So you understand a little bit about the perspective that I bring to the group today. But I'm here mainly in my capacity as the undergraduate program director for the Department of Family Medicine and the director of the new longitudinal program, which you've had a chance to hear little snippets about. So I could relate to what Colin was saying before, that I understand that there's some people in the room who perhaps haven't heard very much about this program. And on the other hand, some of you I know for a fact have heard a lot of this a few times over. So what I'm going to try to do is give enough of a background about the program so you understand we're all on a level playing field, but I'll also highlight for those of you who have seen this before what's new, what's changed, what kind of preoccupations have been running around in our heads these days. And when I say our heads, who am I talking about? This is my committee, Longitudinal Family Medicine Experience Committee, and I think the reason why I show this is to show that we're a very diverse group coming from a number of settings, including CLSC's family medicine units, and a number of community physicians as well. And I've highlighted our two most recent members, a representative in his first year of practice, which I think is an important perspective to bring to the committee, and also our new student representative. And why are we doing all this? I think you've heard a little bit today about why we might be doing this particular program, but for me, when I try to cut through all the confusion, it's quite clear. It's because medicine doesn't end with the patient. It starts with the patient. And what better way to teach medical students than to be able to show them patients from their very first day of medical school. So, to give a little bit of a background, what exactly are we talking about when we talk about? So we've all seen these quintiles, and we know they're going somewhere in the afternoon. What exactly are they going to do, and where will they be? So this is a course which will be exclusively in the first year of the new MDCM curriculum. The purpose, as you can see, is to provide students with early exposure to primary care and to also provide them with an opportunity to have a real clinical correlation to themes that are being introduced in the morning in the classroom. They're also going to have an opportunity to practice history-taking and physical examination skills in an actual clinical setting. So, whereas the bulk of the training, per se, is going to be done in the mornings in terms of clinical presentations, pathophysiology, physical examination, history taking, they're going to come to us in the afternoon where they're going to actually get a chance to practice what they've learned. So our goal is for every single student to be paired with a family physician in the community, and these students will then participate in clinical sessions with that preceptor for 2 half-days per month, starting immediately in the first month of medical school. And each session would be a minimum of 2 hours. So in total, this would represent 20 sessions over the first year of medical school. And again, that's highlighted because in my previous presentations, we had to mention 16 sessions. We've decided to extend that to 20 sessions to allow for exposure in each month. Initially, we had said that there might be some months where it would be more difficult to link up with family physician preceptors because of holidays. Instead, we're integrating some new systems in place to be able to have some flexibility to allow for those vacations while maximizing the clinical exposure. So we do have course objectives. I'm going to put them up quickly and just mention them. And I think these are objectives which, although specific for this component of Fundamentals of Medicine and Dentistry, you'll see a lot of themes which I think are irrespective of which department's perspective you're looking at. So describing common clinical settings, presentations in a primary care setting, essential components of clinical preventive practice and health promotion, okay, the importance of social context and social determinants of health, in terms of skills, history taking and physical examination skills in a clinical setting, and some basic clinical reasoning skills through an approach to undifferentiated problems, which is what we do every day, all day long. We would expect in terms of attitudes that by the end of this course, the students would understand the principles of patient-centered care and understand the importance of continuity of care. And from our perspective, from our actual lens, the idea of being able to follow the patient throughout the life cycle. And obviously, link with the community and available resources. Okay. So in terms of what's new, I just want to emphasize first before I get into that, what is this actually going to look like? So in the afternoons, what we are hoping for is that medical students will be going to their preceptor's office, and we're really looking for preceptors who do have primarily community practices, although you probably appreciate that most family physicians are not in their practices all day, every day, because we tend to be divided amongst a variety of different responsibilities in different clinical settings. Once the student gets there, this is not simply an organized shadowing experience. Okay, this is specifically linked to everything which is happening in their morning blocks of fundamentals of medicine and dentistry. Well, what does that mean? Well, basically, if your student is in the respiration block, so in the morning they've learned various concepts related to respiratory medicine, physical examination skills, history taking, etc., the preceptors will know that. At the beginning of every month, they will be sent a document, and they'll have that document at the beginning of the year, but then get these reminders every month saying, your student is currently involved in the respiration block. As a part of the block, this is a sample of the schedule. These are the types of lectures and small group activities that they're having. In your clinical setting, you might want to consider the following things. Discuss a patient who suffers from COPD. Practice physical examination skills of the respiratory system. Take the history of a patient who suffers from asthma. The point is we're not reinventing the wheel. We're just trying to make a link so people understand why what they're seeing in the morning is important, and they could see the face that's linked to that particular problem. So in terms of what's new and what we've been working on in the last X months since the June retreat, right now, we're really trying to tweak these clinical half days to achieve a balance where the students are really getting optimal clinical and educational value out of these half days, but at the same time, putting it in a package which is deliverable by the family physician. Okay. So who are our preceptors? So I've already mentioned that our goals in terms of our preceptors would try to have a lot of community family physicians with some involvement by family physicians who are in the large family medicine units. So targeting CLSCs, family medicine groups, in addition to family medicine units. Not every family physician has a completely general practice, so we're trying to understand where the role of family physicians with more focused practices would be. So, for example, physicians who do predominantly sports medicine or obstetrics. And we feel that there is value in including these family physicians in this experience because, for the most part, we believe that most family physicians will still be able to navigate the objectives and be able to achieve the objectives of the course, considering ideas, models where perhaps there might be some flexibility where if at the end of a certain block the preceptor has realized that the student has not had a chance, for example, to interact with a patient suffering from diabetes. It's pretty unlikely, but if it were to happen, you know, having a situation where that student would perhaps go into an office with one of their colleagues who is seeing that afternoon a patient who suffers from diabetes and having that flexibility. And I think the important thing is that the way I sort of conceptualize this is it's really very much interactive between the student and the preceptor. So we want the student to really take ownership for, you know, I haven't seen this, I've seen this, I'd like to practice this, you know, and work with their preceptor to be able to achieve that. We realize that many family physicians will not be in the same practice for 10 half days or 14 half days in a week. Therefore, now what we're trying to establish is sort of guidelines in terms of can the students actually follow, have a commitment not just to the clinic, but actually to the preceptor wherever their work might be. So if that particular preceptor happens to be working on their allotted half day of Tuesday afternoon, if that particular Tuesday afternoon they're not in their office, but they're on the wards, or they're in an emergency room, or they're at their nursing home, you know, I think there would be a lot of value added to having that student accompany them in those settings as well, because illness doesn't just happen in an outpatient setting, right? Or in a community clinic. Obviously, the focus is going to be on outpatient care, but that happens in many, many different settings. Okay. So just to take a few minutes to talk about other activities that we're planning for the students. So in addition to these clinical half days, so the clinical half days evaluation by the preceptor right now would account for 60% of the student grade. Another 20% of the student grade would be allotted for by what we call the PICO project, which is really an evidence-based project, which we've been working on for several months now. We've been discussing a lot in the last few months. And our goal in this, with this evidence-based project is to really build upon elements that are taught elsewhere in the description. So, for example, at some point in Block A, there will be a PICO curriculum, so small group teaching, a large group teaching. And what we would like to do, so basically an approach to evidence-based medicine when faced with a clinical problem, what we'd like to do is to get the students to take what they've learned and to bring it to the clinical setting and to understand how that information is useful when they're actually relating to a patient. So our most recent version of the PICO project would be two such projects over the course of the year, down from our original concept of four. The identification of an interesting or important clinical problem in the preceptor's office. Obviously, we think that every problem is both interesting and important, but that's the best way that I could phrase it. And the student would have a very specific mandate to formulate the appropriate question, conduct an evidence-based literature search, discuss the best article that they were able to find in that way. The students would then present the results of their project in small group sessions where there are family physician leaders. We're thinking about a model where family medicine residents who have had additional training in evidence-based medicine could perhaps participate as small group leaders. And then they'd actually be graded using a grid during the small group session. Something interesting that we're trying to explore would be the idea of every student having the ability to post the results of their project on some social media electronic platform, perhaps somewhere in the online curriculum Desire to Learn, or also in some form of a Dropbox. Obviously, we have to be sensitive to the fact that patient confidentiality has to remain the most important thing, and also to be sure that it's understood that not all clinical information provided has necessarily been validated to the point where we're not saying this is our official position on this actual clinical question, but we're sharing projects of the students and we're making it open for discussion and interaction. The last thing that I wanted to talk about today was the last 20% of our grade, which is something that I call the continuity of care project. So this is an essay-based project. I think the best way I could describe where this came from was sitting at a longitudinal committee meeting one day and having somebody say, we certainly can't have somebody 20 half days in our office without asking them to reflect on what continuity of care is like. And I really liked the way that that was put. So our original concept, as we start to flesh it out, sounded a little bit like the My First Year Patient project, which the students have currently in the first year of curriculum. So then we started thinking, how could we make this something different and interesting in its own way? So then we said, maybe we'll take whatever information related to this continuity of care interaction with this patient and try to find a public health approach to it. But then that started to look a lot like what happens in CHAP. So our newest version, and certainly during the question time, if anybody would like to give their opinion on what they think about this, would basically be giving the students a choice. So in other words, I can't figure it out, so let's let them decide. But basically having a mandatory component, which is describing the patient, the demographics, the family. But then in the second part of this paper, asking the student to select a particular angle that they would like to discuss and basing that on our four principles of family medicine. So our four principles are basically, the doctor-patient relationship is central to what we do. The family physician is a resource to a defined patient population, family physician is a skilled clinician, and family medicine is community-based. So something in there, a particular interaction with a patient longitudinally over a year, maybe that student is interested in how that family physician had to pull upon resources and act as a resource to that particular patient and wants to discuss that. Maybe there was something particular about the doctor-patient relationship in that interaction which inspired the patient, the students, and they'd like to discuss that. So that's what we're working on now in terms of the continuity of care project, so certainly open for any kind of discussion. Last thing I'd like to quickly mention is faculty development. So you can imagine that in terms of faculty development, we're talking about a large number of preceptors in the community. Some might be closer, have closer links to McGill, either in terms of associations or in terms of how actually their physical distance from McGill. Others might be further away. So you can understand how faculty development is going to be critically important. So we have to balance that to the fact that it's difficult for a family physician in the community to come in on a regular basis for faculty development initiatives. So right now we're looking at three in-person faculty development initiatives. So a possible launch event for the program in the spring of 2013, a mandatory faculty development session in late spring, so May, June, which would then be repeated in August and September for people who were not able to attend the first time, and then a feedback session at the end of the course, which I think is going to be critically important. We don't really have any kind of paradigm here at McGill to compare this course to, so that first generation of preceptors and students were really going to need to hear what they're saying. There are similar programs in many universities across Canada, but this is the first one exactly like this at McGill. Focus of in-person sessions would basically be presentations by key stakeholders to explain the rationale behind and the structure of this new curriculum, a little bit like what we're doing today. Discussion of themes, components, and blocks. A discussion of the actual course, but also teaching tips, so actually being able to give them concrete tools to be able to teach and precept these students. Like I said, it's going to be absolutely essential to have thorough support for these community preceptors. So another initiative that we're trying to develop would be online access, so online support for the preceptors, in the form of once a month basically having a set time where preceptors could log on or call in and have access to myself and to Marion Dove to answer their questions related to the course and to give them the opportunity to discuss with each other what's going on. So that's basically where we're at. My favorite new thing is our email address, longitudinal.fammed@mcgill.ca. So the next time you see a family doctor, tell them all about this really neat course and ask them to email here and tell me that they want to join on. So thank you.
Suggestion for your final evaluation method. Besides just reflecting on the four constructs or of family mm-hmm. medicine, could you add a reflective piece where they have to actually reflect on their own learning? Not just lists of what they've observed, but what impact
it had upon them, the impact that it had upon them.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be critical. Thank you.
I just wanted to mention the other little piece of good news is that Lenny and Marion will be collaborating with a researcher in the Department of Family Medicine who has become quite enthusiastic about evaluating this program and the impact of it both on the students and on the preceptors themselves. So I think that'll be really great.
Yeah, we're very excited about that. Thanks, Marion.
I was very impressed with the PICO assignment and the fact that the questions are grounded sort of in the authentic environment, because my understanding was that the questions are really coming from the students' observations in the clinical setting. So are the preceptors going to have a role in helping them articulate or identify a clinical question, and then does that project come back to the clinical practice? I'm just thinking of some of the major sort of desired goals or outcomes of EBM and evidence-based practice. So is it going back?
Yeah, so that's exactly the way we would conceive of this project, that I'd really like that to be part of the dialogue that happens between the student and the preceptor. The preceptor knows at the beginning from the onset that this is an assignment that the student has to do. It would be nice for them to be able to dialogue throughout the experience and say, hey, this might be a really good clinical question that you could do your project on. Now, will that preceptor actually grade the project? Probably not. That being said, we would love for the student to be able to go back and say, hey, this is what I found. What do you think? I think it'll make the interaction between preceptor and student even more rich and rewarding for both. So that's exactly what we had in mind.
I think this was a spectacular presentation, and I'm really happy to see how you're going about doing it. particularly what you're doing now is going to be very important for us people later on in the hospitals when they come to their clinical rotations. If the students have already had an introduction to how to learn in a clinical setting, it will make it a lot easier for us to carry on and join hands with you later on.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. I do think that that's important. And I think on top of that, that there's that aspect of getting students to really understand why they're doing what they're doing. You know, and sometimes at the beginning when you're there's so much anxiety at the beginning about, you know, what you're doing and your marks. And I think that this really keeps everybody linked to their underlying motivation to this. So.